Greetings and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here this morning, the first week of October 2014, our first program of the month. In a few minutes, we'll be welcoming Syracuse University's 12th chancellor, just 12 chancellors in over 140 years of Syracuse University history, and only the fifth chancellor to speak at TMR in its 49-year history. Yep, that's right. Next year we'll be celebrating TMR's 50th anniversary. So I've been doing a little bit of historical research, and it seems that our first visit from a Syracuse University chancellor was in October 1971, and that was John E. Corbally, Jr., the eighth chancellor of the university, who, according to the university website, was able to take steps forward in outlining a plan for the restructuring of central administration and overseeing a new financial structure that put the university's finances on solid ground. So that was about 43 years ago. So we'll see how things shape up this time. Quickly, though, a few words about the rest of October. The schedule is out. It's on our website. Next week, we'll be talking about Engage CNY Cultural Plan, Syracuse Stage, Syracuse Convention and Visitors Bureau, Lorenzo Historic Site, along with CNY Arts will be represented on the panel. Then we'll devote three sessions to electoral issues. On October 16th, Susan Lerner of Common Cause New York will be talking about the redistricting referendum that will be on the ballot in November. On October 23rd, the two new candidates for Onondaga County Sheriff will be with us. And on October 30th, we'll have a discussion with congressional candidates Dan Maffei and John Katko. Now, for both of those candidate forums, Grant Rear has kindly agreed to come back and moderate for us. So that's a pretty exciting lineup for the next few weeks. Right now, it's my pleasure to welcome Sarah Wason, a TMR regular. She's Executive Director of Foundation Relations at Syracuse University, and she'll be introducing Chancellor Siverut. Thanks, Sarah.
Good morning, friends. How is everybody this morning? Good. Nice group. So I'm very pleased to welcome and introduce Chancellor Siverut. He came to Syracuse from Washington University in St. Louis, where he served as Dean of the Law School and Distinguished University Professor. Prior to that, he served as the Dean at Vanderbilt Law School and on the faculty and administration of the University of Michigan Law School. Chancellor Siverut has served since 2010 as one of two independent trustees of the Deepwater Horizon Oil Spill Trust, a $20 billion fund created by BP in negotiation with the White House to pay claims arising from the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. A 1981 graduate of the University of Michigan Law School, he was also an expert witness for the University of Michigan in the landmark affirmative action case Gutter v. Bollinger. He characterizes one of his most defining moments as serving as law clerk to U.S. Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, who created the kind of high expectations that the chancellor really espouses today. Chancellor Siverut and his wife, Dr. Ruth Chen, are the parents of three grown children, Stephen, Brian, and David. Dr. Chen is an environmental toxicologist, and she holds a professor of practice at the College of Engineering and Computer Science. Kent's a native of Irondequoit, New York, and Syracuse was the very first college campus he saw as a child, so things have kind of come full circle for him. When he made his decision about coming to Syracuse, he said that this just felt right. He's a gifted educator and scholar. He's passionate about the university, and he cares deeply about the student experience. Many of you have heard about his living for 2 weeks in the dorms at Syracuse so that he could really get an idea of what the students' perspective on Syracuse University was. Another interesting thing, if you haven't looked on the SU website, he does a blog, and it's called Bleeding Orange, and he shares his perspectives on student life, some of the people, interesting people at all levels of the university. It's really quite an interesting read if you get a chance to go on the SU website. Since coming to Syracuse, he's really accelerated a planning process, which he'll talk about a little bit more today. It's really a fast process, but a very efficient process. On the personal side, he loves murder mysteries, music, kayaking, and he's fluent in Mandarin and Spanish. He's been described by many as humble, gracious, and the smartest person in the room. I've felt very fortunate to have worked with him over the last 9 months, and I've seen some of the great changes that he's instituting. Please welcome Chancellor Severud.
I want to thank Sarah for that kind introduction, and Sandra for her leadership, and everybody who's participated in the Thursday morning roundtable. I doubt all of you have been here for all 49 years, but some of you have. And I want to welcome you to Drumlins, which is of course part of Syracuse University and is staffed by a very dedicated group of people who I'm very grateful to for their work. I know all of you in various ways are connected to Syracuse University as alums, often as staff or emeritus staff or faculty. All of you are affected by Syracuse University in various ways and therefore are genuine stakeholders as Syracuse University is in the city and the region. I also want to emphasize two things before prepared remarks, which is first, I am definitely, after 9 months here, have learned that I'm not the smartest person in the room. I feel like this university and this community is sprawling and wonderful and idiosyncratic and deep, and I know it about an inch deep at this point. And so I'm doing my best to take my time to learn it deeply before making decisions that I don't have to make. And then the second thing to say, which my children would insist upon, is that since they laugh every time I attempt it, is that I am not fluent in Mandarin. I try. also a little bit, maybe a little bit less coherent today than I usually try to be because I became a grandfather for the first time 20 minutes ago. So. I thought I'd talk a little bit about Syracuse and Syracuse University, a general perspective, and a little bit about the process that's going on for planning at the university this year, and then stop and take your questions. And in these remarks, maybe tilting a little more than with some audiences towards impact of the university in the community in the region, because I suspect that's of greater interest to you than some audiences. Although I've discovered it's of interest to almost all audiences I speak to anywhere in the world. I have been here less than a year, and I have an interesting perspective on upstate New York because I did grow up in Irondequoit. My father worked for Eastman Kodak. My mother worked for Rochester General Hospital from when I was very, very young. And my twin brother went to Upstate Medical University for his medical degree. My other brother was the editor and is now the retired editor of the Daily Messenger in Canandaigua, New York. And my sister, for many, many years, was a physical therapist at St. Elizabeth's Hospital in Utica. So I have a pretty deep background in upstate New York, but I moved away to go to college and then have spent almost all my working career away from upstate New York, just coming back for family on a regular basis. So the last 9 months have been the first time, other than a visiting semester at Cornell University, the first time that I've spent a lengthy period of time back in upstate New York since 1974, okay, to give you a perspective. So in some ways, it's like a time capsule. Many of you who have been here since 1974 and previous need to imagine what it would be like to have lived here steadily and be deeply engaged until 1974 and then come back for the first time now, right, all those years later. Can you do that thought experiment with me for a while? And what I want to start with observing from that experience is it is better here, okay? It is better here than the wonderful places I have been, okay? I've spent my career kind of a decade at a time in Washington, D.C., in Ann Arbor, Michigan, in Nashville, Tennessee, and in most recently in St. Louis. And coming back here to live permanently, I am struck by how many assets there are in this community and how the quality of life all four seasons of the year is better here, largely because of the people and institutions that are here. I really believe that. I really have experienced it. I think it's important for somebody who loves the place and grew up here and has come back to tell that to you, because often when I meet with people here, they are apologetic. They are apologetic for upstate New York. They are apologetic for the city of Syracuse. They're apologetic for the region. They'll say things like, well, I know you came from Nashville or St. Louis or Ann Arbor, and we don't have X, but we do have this wonderful thing over here. And I just want to say, looking at the region as a whole and the people as a whole, it is better here. People should want to be here over anywhere else. And I profoundly believe that, and I think it's important for us to say that often. It is better here for a lot of idiosyncratic reasons, not because there are huge institutions that impose their will, but because there's a million different organizations, clubs, activities, associations, all populated by this intertwined network of people that are doing multiple things at once. And it's populated by the best people in the world from my point of view, because they have this wonderful combination of Eastern scrappiness and Midwestern decency. And I just love it here. And so I hope that you will not be hearing from a new chancellor for a long time at the Thursday Morning Roundtable. I was aware of Syracuse University's reputation for community engagement well before I came back here this year. And that's because Washington University in St. Louis had a community engagement challenge. And it was a community engagement challenge that was provoked by very serious metropolitan area challenges. The decline and departure of major employers, the fragmentation of local government, and occasional racial issues, as we've become much more aware of over the summer because of events in Ferguson. Several years ago, our university looked all around the country to figure out who to study, to figure out how to get better and how the region could get better, and we landed on Syracuse, and we brought much of the leadership of Syracuse University to Washington University for a multi-day seminar on how universities could be anchor institutions to help improve regions. And that was an occasion that I reconnected with my predecessor, Nancy Cantor, who I had worked with at the University of Michigan, and learned all that had been done in the last 10 years to engage this university with the community. And you should know that that also is fairly unprecedented and very impactful compared to peer cities and peer universities. And so something I am and we should be very proud of. I am very pleased that that effort has occurred here, because it has shown much benefit and that I see every day in my engagement with folks. I believe that universities are a great blessing to communities in which they're located, because the pursuit of knowledge in its broadest sense confers blessings on communities, and communities enhance the pursuit of knowledge. I think that one of the greatest contributions today, though, and I say though because our dedication to community needs to continue, I think right now one of the challenges is for Syracuse University to continue to be a great contributor to the city and the region. It has to continue to be a great, thriving, engaged international research university, by which I mean it has to be successful in the competition with all other universities and successful in the competition on its own terms, not on the terms imposed on it or the models imposed on it from without. And that's a challenge. It's a challenge because of the demographics of higher education, in which the number of students in upstate New York looking for a private education or at a private university, which we are, is declining. It's a challenge because the number of students nationwide who can afford education is significantly impacted, and therefore significantly impacts the university's resources and budgets. I think that we need to have a model that enables us to be the anchor institution in this community that continues and continues to thrive and cause the best people in the world to want to be in Syracuse, to be brought to Syracuse, and thereby to contribute in manifold ways at the university and in the community. And I mean not just students, who are my primary responsibility, but also faculty and staff and all the people attracted to a university town. So in trying to figure out how to do this, I discovered that a new chancellor at Syracuse is looked to almost instantly for inspiration and confidence by all segments of the community. Within a day of my announcement, people wanted to know exactly what I was going to do, and not exactly what I was going to do in a general sense, but exactly what I was going to do to their particular program that they had devoted three decades to and that they knew extraordinarily well. And the challenge of that is for me to give an answer to a question to someone who's devoted their lives to a program and knows it extraordinarily well based on my vast knowledge of one day or one month, is profoundly disrespectful. And so the challenge for me as a chancellor has been to identify general principles and values about how we should think about the enterprise we're on, do as little damage as possible by my own decisions that are uninformed by the local context and culture, but also keep us moving forward so that Syracuse University will continue to be a vibrant and vital anchor and mainstay for this region. And that's a very delicate task. It's like cooking the most complicated souffle imaginable. And how we've been trying to go about it, with mostly success but some challenges, is by identifying some key values or key initiatives and a process of planning. What I've identified so far and identified in my inauguration address, which I know some of you are present for, is four main initiatives or principles that we should hopefully embrace going forward. The first is an outstanding student experience, and particularly an outstanding undergraduate experience at Syracuse University. And that has many elements, including insisting on excellent teaching, on wonderful opportunities, including in research and extracurricular activities and in the community, working to enforce and respect a humane and caring and supportive staff across the board, treating everybody's work at the university as important and valued and integral to an outstanding student experience, and also as I said at the inauguration, focusing to the extent anything one school is focused on right now on our College of Arts and Sciences. It is the college with the majority of the instruction of undergraduates and the largest enrollment of undergraduates, those being two different things because many students in other schools and colleges take a significant portion of their coursework in arts and science. I believe that because of the school's centrality, it's a good time to focus on it and focus on enhancing its identity, its mission, and its resources, and I have been working hard on that. Second, I think it's a really important time for us to focus on research at the university and research excellence. And this, maybe more than the other things I'll say, is important for those of you who care about the community. I have had the benefit of being at thriving research universities for the last 30 years of my career, the University of Michigan, Washington University in St. Louis, and Vanderbilt University. And I can tell you that a thriving research environment brings many times benefits to the community as a whole. It brings benefits because it attracts new enterprises and businesses, because it attracts a diverse population who contribute in all sorts of ways. It helps families keep their children local rather than move away. And it makes the whole community a frequent source of ideas, ideas that often lead in unexpected directions for developments. I know that's been true in the past in Syracuse. I know it's true now, but I think having a thriving research enterprise on the Hill will bring untold benefits across the community and therefore is important for us to attend to. Third, I think one of the glories of the history of Syracuse University is that it has not always said it has to do the same thing everybody else is doing. Okay, one of the things we're most proud of at Syracuse Universities are things we did before anybody else did them, chances we took on students, on faculty, on ideas, on programs that others were not willing to take. I could give lots of examples of that in each school and college. Think of the innovations in our School of Education, really the first school that really embraced inclusive education, for example. I say this because I think this aspect of our history is something we need to embrace, and that's a willingness to embrace change and a willingness to embrace ideas, not because Harvard, Yale, Stanford, and Columbia are doing them, therefore we have to do them, but to embrace them because they are opportunities to leapfrog others. That's one thing that is the most challenging thing I have to say to you, which is when I left upstate New York in 1974, I left the Rochester area, which was a confident, prosperous, and somewhat smug city. Okay? An aspect of that environment that I left was a confidence and a belief that people were capable of achieving things and capable of taking risks, and that change was not all for the bad, but change occasionally brought great benefits. Returning to upstate New York 40 years later, I've occasionally confronted members of the community who have only experienced change as bringing bad things. In fact, I've encountered so many people who have heard many new leaders come to the community like me and talk about change and immediately hear, oh, great, there goes something I really value again. And I think some of you can resonate to that experience. And yet, therefore, the challenge I face and we all face is that if we don't do some of the things that Syracuse did in the past, of embracing things that nobody else was doing, if we are unwilling to do some changes because that's part of our history, if we don't, in other words, believe that we are capable of doing great things with great results, then it's going to be hard for us to leapfrog others. It's going to be hard for our region to get better. And so I think we need to be the university that does change well and that embraces change, and doing change well means doing change humanely and respectfully to our history and our people. My last agenda item that I went over in my inauguration speech was the most concrete. The three things I've said so far, undergraduate education, research, and change, for many cynics, sound quite generic of what a university leader says whenever a university leader starts a new job. We're going to be great at teaching, we're going to be great at research, and we're going to change in good ways. And so I felt that I needed to give something specific that was an example of how we could be different and how we could get better in a way that would be good for all parts of the university and the community. And the example I picked, after a lot of reading of history and a lot of talking to people about opportunity, was for Syracuse University once again to become the best university in the country for veterans. This is, for me, morally a good thing to do for reasons I will not enumerate today. But I want to point out it is strategically an extremely sensible thing for Syracuse University to do well, because there are great opportunities to strengthen and diversify our student body through veterans. There are great opportunities in research, where very significant funding is available for research related to veterans at a time when research funding is contracting in many other areas. There's great opportunities through engaging with veterans to embrace the reality of the new normal. The new normal in the United States today, and I am emphatic in saying this in a forum sponsored by University College, is that the normal student in higher education today is not the student who, after high school, goes directly to college for 4 years on a full pay basis by their parents, and then goes directly into the career they planned to have when they were 18 years old. Okay? The normal student today is the student that we actually have. I really want Syracuse University to treat as normal every student we actually have. And that means they come into our university from all sorts of directions at all entry points. They come in part-time, they come in transfer, they come in through all routes and through all experiences. And we need to deliver an education that treats them as normal. Okay? I love the students who come directly from high school and graduate in 4 years and have a successful outcome. That's normal too, but it's not the only normal. I believe that veterans capture the diversity of normal today, maybe more than any other population. And in doing a great job for veterans in our education at Syracuse University, we will learn how to do a great job for everyone better. So those are the four key areas I'm focused on, and I've asked the university community to be focused on. There is a planning effort going on to figure out how to implement these and other ideas that organically emerge from our communities. It is a planning effort that normally would take 3 years, and we don't have 3 years, in my view. In my view, there's some urgency to address issues at Syracuse University. So we are simultaneously doing strategic planning, which causes many academics to run screaming from the room. many academics have seen strategic plans before. I've been in rooms where they've said, oh, my God, I feel another committee coming on. Nevertheless, we do not currently have a strategic plan for the university. And in particular, we don't have a focused strategic plan in the area of academics. And we need one, because we need to have a shared vision for the university and some guidance that is a result of a collective process to where to invest our limited resources. So that process is going on, and we'll produce a draft strategic plan for the Board of Trustees of the university to review in May. It's a process that involves hundreds of people right now, many committees, but I think it's going to produce some focused results. We simultaneously are engaging in a campus master planning effort, which I know is extremely interesting and important to many in the community. A campus master plan does not design a particular building. It looks at the university as a whole and the neighborhoods that surround it and identifies what we're trying to be and what the guidelines should be for what we put where and how we connect them. It influences everything from what we're going to do about residential life, about academic life and academic buildings, and the infrastructure, buses, bike routes, expansion, contraction, what we do to connect them. We have, in the last stages of hiring a firm to lead this effort, a firm that has done spectacular master planning work elsewhere in the United States. And that also will produce a proposed document that the board, I think, will consider at the same time as the academic plan, because the two need to be in sync with each other. And finally, we are engaged in an operational excellence program by which we're looking at how the university can operate efficiently and effectively so as to generate the maximum energy and savings towards our academic mission. That is going on also organically by teams. Right now there's teams working on various issues within the university that seemed like low-hanging fruit. We're looking at how we do purchasing, for example, and can we do purchasing more efficiently. And we're looking at somewhat antiquated systems under which we do the paperwork for sponsored research and for keeping track of our alumni. Some of you who are alumni here may have had the Syracuse experience of seeming like one hand doesn't know what the other is doing, or more like the Indian gods, many hands not knowing what the others are doing. We're trying to figure out how we can do things more efficiently and explicitly use the savings to plow into the academic mission. The overarching goal of this work is to position the university to continue to be strong and an innovator and leader among peers in the future. We are looking at other issues that affect our future and some that I suspect you'll ask me about, but let me anticipate one of them, and that is enrollment. Okay. How many students Syracuse enrolls has profound effects on the local community as well as on our academic mission and our future. My belief is we need to be exactly as large as we can be to deliver a great education to every student, and no larger and no smaller. The ideal size of Syracuse University is something that ought to come out of this strategic planning effort, and I don't know what it is yet. I have heard from many, however, many faculty, many students, and many in the community, that the recent expansion in our undergraduate enrollment, which has been quite substantial, has strained our ability to deliver a great education to every student. Our entering class this year of freshmen is slightly smaller than last year, and I believe it's important just to say, unless we have the resources to support expansion and deliver a great education to the students, I don't think we should expand in our undergraduate enrollment. My highest responsibility is to our students. I've been trying to spend a great deal of time understanding their experience, not just living briefly in the dorms, but walking through every dorm, every building, every space, and talking to students in as many unplanned encounters as I can outside the bubble that surrounds a chancellor. I have learned that we have the best students in the world. I would like you to believe that because I do. I think that by most measures, a Syracuse University student is extraordinary compared to anywhere that matters. I've spoken my inauguration about the students, and I want to say again what is particularly wonderful, having spent so much time at wonderful peers institutions. Syracuse University students at their best are empowered and unentitled. Okay, this is a university that is student-powered in so many ways. There are relatively few operations, organizations, activities that are not driven by students, populated by students, inspired by students. And the students that populate them and inspire them have a sense of gratitude for the opportunities they're being given, a sense of entrepreneurial seizing the day, and a belief that it's okay for them to do things that at other universities they'd ask some administrator to approve. Okay, it's wonderful to see. I think it explains two things: why they're so successful after they graduate in all fields of endeavor, and why they feel such an ownership of the university after they graduate. And they do, by the way. And it's wonderful. I can't do anything at Syracuse University without hearing from an owner of it telling me how I should have done it better. And that owner is usually an alumnus who poured heart and soul into it as a student, not as a student kind of customer receiving something here, but as a student owner driving the activity, engaged in the activity, whether in the classroom or outside it. And that's the kind of student that we should all die to have, and we should be proud of having, and therefore we should feel an obligation to do our best for, which I do. I have a lot to learn, especially from you, I think, and I'm open to any question you give me, and it's so great to be back home. Thank you. And I gather I've left enough time, Sarah, for 25 minutes of questions. Is that right? I know we're being recorded, so I hope I didn't say anything intemperate. So.
And for those who may be guests, including a couple of Vanderbilt Law grads, I take questions. Just raise your hand, and I will try to make my way around the room in the time that we have. And we do have a little over 20 minutes. And I'll start with Jack McCray, and if you would stand. Thank you.
My son-in-law just completed a master's degree. He did it entirely online, something that just to me would not be a good experience. But we're moving into, or are completely into, a digital age. To what extent is that going to impact the future of Syracuse University?
I think it's going to impact us significantly and positively. I have found at Syracuse that we are ahead of most of the universities I worked at previously in embracing different platforms for delivering high-quality education. And that is true in online platforms as well. Two schools of the university are in the process of launching online master's degrees. That's the Whitman School, both an MBA and an accounting degree, and the Newhouse School, which is in the process of getting final approval for a new master's degree in related to communications. Other schools, including University College, have innovated in online education. And because of our iSchool and our School of Engineering and innovation in other areas, we have the personnel and the attitude, the entrepreneurial attitude, that will enable us to embrace online education at a high level of quality better than most American universities. I believe that we have a huge advantage in online education if we embrace it carefully and make sure we do not denigrate the quality of what we do in person in Syracuse. That huge advantage is that I think some of you realize, but you may not realize the degree to which it is true, the Syracuse name is one of the most best-known brands in higher education around the world, much better known than schools some faculty members who read rankings think is the case. And therefore, I think if we do a good job in online education, we will be a leader, without denigrating the residential experience, which will continue to be an essential platform. I should also add that I was a pioneer myself in online education, so I'm a little biased. I believed that I went into it with great skepticism because I was very proud of my teaching, and I taught a full load until my last full class I taught the first week of January of this year. So I've been teaching full load all along. And I felt that nothing could compete with a professor in person, knowing each student by name and story, engaging them every day in class, and following up on a regular basis. So I was very skeptical of online education. I finished also in January taking my negotiation class, which I've been teaching to 80 students across all disciplines of the university every semester, a very experiential hand-on class in which students negotiated and drafted 5 agreements over the course of the class. I finished converting that to an online class just before I left, with a film crew of 10 with 15 student volunteers. And I discovered through that process that, and this is going to be painful to say to some of the professors in the audience, the online class I created, I feel, was actually better for many students than the in-person class. Now, better for odd reasons that I didn't anticipate. Better because there are all kinds of learners in the world. There are visual learners, there are in-person learners. But with technology for my online class, students were able to review at will every part of what I did. They were able to watch themselves on video over and over again to see how they negotiated. They were able to watch my class sessions and my interactions with others. And they were able to do the class on their own schedules. So one of my students in my first online class was a USAID worker in Mali who literally dialed into it from a tent in Mali, okay? And I do think that while my in-person negotiation class was a great class, for an aid worker in Mali, it probably was better to be able to access that online in the format developed. So I'm optimistic for Syracuse University in this area, and I'm not afraid of it.
I applaud your including the in your strategic planning the academic end of things, but I have a broad question as to the what they will think is an educated person graduating from Syracuse. There was a very interesting op-ed article in the Wall Street Journal just recently that suggested that the traditional approach where a law student would intern with a law firm, that a medical student would intern in their field, was probably inappropriate to turn somebody out into the real world. And the author's point was that these people should be encouraged to get out of their comfort zone and maybe work as a dishwasher in the summer, maybe work on a road crew, work with people who have struggled with the English language. And that these people graduating from a college or a university would be better equipped to go out into the real world. And I wondered what your thoughts were on this aspect of it.
I didn't read that that op-ed piece, but from your description of it, I agree profoundly with it. Okay. And by the way, that describes the vast majority of students I meet at Syracuse University. Okay. I would say that, you know, I think I've done most of the jobs you just described, including cleaning surgical waste and grounds crew and short order cook. And I do think that was better preparation in some ways for my career that followed than working at a big law firm for a summer. But I want to tell you about our students now. I mean, my first experiences at Syracuse University was to go to the dress rehearsal of Don Giovanni at the Settner School of Music and watch a performance of that opera that was astoundingly good, astoundingly better than I had seen at any university and better than I'd seen at three opera companies. And it was astoundingly good in part because of the man who sang Don Ottavio, who was a Puerto Rican opera student, who then served my son a latte at Starbucks the next morning. And I say that not because I want all our students to work at Starbucks, because I think you need to realize our students, the vast majority of our students are working now during school, in part to support themselves in school. And that includes, by the way, our student athletes, who have virtually full-time jobs in many senses. And I think this is good because it teaches people time management, it teaches people respect for teams, and teaches people what I profoundly believe, which is that a unique strength of the United States historically was a general belief that all work is honorable, right? That there is not status, that people who do high-status jobs like chancellor are, by virtue of being chancellor, morally superior human beings to be more respected than the person who serves you coffee or served you coffee this morning. I think nothing teaches that better than actually having done a range of jobs during your careers. And so I do very much hope that we hold on to that at Syracuse. It has been lost at elite higher education in most of the United States. I want to say that again. It has been lost at elite higher education in most of the United States.
I want to ask you to stand.
Can you? Yes.
First of all, I want to thank you for coming to the Westcott Street Cultural Fair. The worst weather we've had in 23 years, but you and your wife were raving.
It was wonderful.
The weather. And I do want to talk to you about the Westcott University community. When you spoke about your master plan, I'm wondering whether you have more formal plans for involving the community in giving input about the relationship between the community and the university. And although I respect your time frame, you must be aware that the people in the University Westcott neighborhood are very concerned about the end of the UNSAC agreement, which is called the street closing agreement, which provides quite a bit of money to fund organizations throughout the Westcott University area. Thank you.
So when I spoke about a new chancellor knowing a lot of things widely but not deeply, I was speaking about the UNSAC agreement, I'll say. So I intend to go back to my office and find out about it quickly. What I will say is that We are at the beginning of the campus master planning effort. A university-wide committee has selected, I believe, a firm. The next stage is extraordinarily deep surveying and forums and listening to people, including in the community. And that stage will occur for the rest of the fall, as I understand it. So I would very much hope that part of that information gathering, surveying data would include the neighbors. I'll try and find out that it happens, but I see a couple people present who probably can convey that message that I said that, and others who will hear it on the radio. I do want to say that I terrifically enjoyed, even in the rain, the Westcott Street Fair. And I enjoyed it for an unusual reason that I want to say to you. Obviously, there were wonderful events and families and children and activities, but a large part of it was just coming back to why I love upstate New York, which is at one place at one time you saw that it was an embodiment of Alexis de Tocqueville, that Americans at their best have all these different organizations and activities and associations around activities and interests, and it isn't monolithically governed by institutions like Syracuse University, but I met with the people who care about Thorndon Park and people who cared about other activities, all lined up, all engaging with each other, all seemed to be related to each other in various ways, but also independent. And that's how upstate New York is supposed to be. And I know that you made it happen. So if nobody's thanked you for all those years of doing it, I want to do so now. So thank you. So.
Good morning. One of the things you've skirted around a little bit has been athletics at SU. And it seems to be the one area of the university that gets the most ink, both very positive and very negative. And I wonder if we're going to, what the role you see of that organization in the overall life of the campus.
Sure. You're very kind. I didn't skirt around it. I didn't mention it at all. I would say The remarkable thing to me is that I had a forum and got this far into it, and it wasn't about athletics, since that is what I'm asked about more than anything else in private and in public. So the question is, what I see is the role of athletics at Syracuse University. Did I get that right?
Well, yeah. Because of being both very good and very bad as part of the institution.
Yeah. So I am spending more time on athletics-related issues than I expected to, and it's not because of things peculiar to Syracuse University. It's because intercollegiate athletics and the very idea of amateurism in collegiate athletics is undergoing its most turbulent change in a generation right now. And just to make that really concrete, the five major conferences, athletic conferences in men's basketball and football, have just negotiated a degree of autonomy from the NCAA, and the 65 presidents of those schools in those conferences, of which Syracuse is one, will be meeting in January to figure out what that autonomy means. At the same time, due to court decisions issues out there in the public eye, including in Congress, there is big change coming to how student athletes are treated. The very model of the scholar athlete and the regulatory system for the scholar athlete may be well about to very significantly change. I have found at Syracuse University that the prominence of athletics has been, by and large, a great benefit to the university. It has been a unifier for the region at a time when it needs unifiers for people from across the region to be proud of and to identify with Syracuse. It is a reason Syracuse is known around the world. You can't travel in a small town in China wearing a Syracuse t-shirt and not have people come up to you and know about Syracuse. And it's not because of some wonderful academic programs. It's often because of a fascination with men's basketball. So I think the prominence of Syracuse University in athletics can be a very strong positive for the university and the community, and has been. And I think the challenge is managing it well going forward, consistent with our academic mission. And all I can say is every other university leader I've talked to in the last 9 months with the major athletic program is struggling with exactly the same balancing issues. Is that the question is including? Yes, actually, many universities are struggling with what to do with their stadiums and talking about what they can afford to spend on them.
Yeah. Thank you.
If you could invite three people to dine with you who are living today, whom would you invite?
Aside from your family and your newborn child.
So they have to be living. That constrains it greatly. I can't have one more meal with my parents. I'd say, first of all, maybe I should qualify this a little bit to explain the unusual way I come at it. I had the experience of suddenly getting a job with the second most famous woman in the world in 1983, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. I say second most because of Margaret Thatcher at the time, who was her friend. And so very early in my life, I experienced a little bit of what we saw at Syracuse University this week with the visit of Oprah Winfrey, which is I saw how fame changes people and how they interact with people. Okay, and so I got dulled to celebrity early in my life. Okay, and so I generally would not pick the three celebrities to sit with. I'd pick three people whose ideas I've been most fascinated about by my reading. Okay, and so now I'm challenged to make sure they're still alive from the books that I've read. So I like to read very eclectically. I particularly like to read in history. If Robert Kagan is still alive, I think he is. He's a military historian who has a fairly realistic perspective on the wars we've been getting into lately. I would love to sit down with him. Scientists, I'd love to sit down with Edmund O. Wilson, who's in some ways the most profound thinker about the scientific issues and the politics that follow from them in the world. And then there are a few great university leaders, and the greatest I've met briefly lately has been Donna Shalala, who is the president of the University of Miami. And she is stepping down this year. She is a Syracuse graduate. I had like 20 minutes to talk to her. I feel like I could use 10 hours with her to understand how she did the things she'd done. I mentioned Donna because of the previous question about athletics. We're going into a world where the whole model is being rethought, and we're going to need new leaders with political savvy, with experience in higher education, and with a primary concern for students and for academics. And so Donna seems to be one of the relatively few people who can combine all those attributes. So I think I'd like to include her. Now, thinking of Donald, Edmund Wilson, and Mr. Kagan together, I'm not sure it would be a happy conversation, but those would be the three that come to mind. So.
Okay. Chancellor, I'm going to end with a question that I hope is a little bit easier. But first, I wanted to thank you first for being with us and also, though, for sharing some breaking news that I expect is going to be in the headlines tomorrow. And also, though, to congratulate you on that news and to congratulate you and Dr. Chen and your son and his family on your new grandchild. So the question is, the new grandchild.
Yeah, I have a
its name.
I'm told, although just by a text message while I'm speaking, that I have a granddaughter and her name is Clara.
Excellent.
So, thank you. So
excellent.
So.
All right. And so, okay, that was an easy question. Thanks. So we'll see. How do you think that's going to change your perspective on?
I don't feel old enough to be a grandfather, so this
you're
is
not.
Hard.
Definitely
so.
Not.
But I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay.
Thanks so much, everybody.
Thank you so
Take
much.
Care.
I hope you'll come again and join us.
Thanks.